Hi guys, welcome to your weekly Stoke City podcast, Every Step Along the Way. So lots to discuss again this week. We'll look at an excellent 3 points versus Swansea, look ahead to a crunch tie this weekend versus Forest, and of course we'll look at all the news from around the club this week. And it's that time again, so Dan, Andy, how have you both been? You been okay?
Yeah, I've been alright, obviously. We've had a good week of football and I've finally got an interview for a job, so I'm happy about that.
Oh, nice, mate. What job's that?
Lifeguarding at Alton Towers at the moment. I'm hopefully got it. It's the interview on the same day Forest have, so I've got it for the earliest time, so I can still get down there.
That's dedication for you.
Dedication.
Well done, mate. I'm sure you'll get it, so good luck with that. Dan, how have you been, mate?
I'm just more interested at the minute. As Andy told them that his Saturdays are completely taken.
Yeah, I've told him I can only do Monday to Friday and then the odd day in the week where I might just say, you know what, I kind of can't do this one.
Because obviously every Saturday it's either Stoke at home or Vale at home.
Oh, for God's sake, Dan.
So, yeah, your Saturdays are busy with that, aren't they?
Pretty busy.
And don't forget as well, mate, I mean, you've got the pod on a Wednesday, so you have you told them you've got to finish by no later than 7?
I think it closes before 7, to be fair.
Good. Yes, well, make sure it bloody does, mate. Get your priorities in order. Anyway, good to have you both. And just before we're going to get into things, I want to do a very quick shout-out because, I mean, we always talk about different comments we have from, you know, various different people that come through and bits like that. But we had a quick message on Twitter the other night from a chap called Matthew. So Matthew is an American fan of Stoke City. He's been kind of, you know, basically he's been a Stoke fan for I think about 3 or 4 years. Me and Andy met him last night in Delilah's bar because he mentioned he wanted to meet us. So it was, you know, really good to meet Matthew. We got a lot of insight. We got a little insight into American sports as well, didn't we, Andy?
It was very confusing that players get promoted rather than the teams.
Yeah, it was, mate. It was really good, but you know what? Really nice, down to earth guys. He obviously brought his friend with him, who had, you know, his little lad there, and it was just great to see their perspective. And you know what was interesting, Dan, is that the conversation we had was obviously one of the questions I asked him was, "How on earth did you start supporting Stoke? I mean, how the heck does that happen when you know you live in Colorado? It's not like we're on TV every 5 minutes." And his basic reason behind that was that, you know, Shaqiri and Arnie, I think, did he say when we were playing Leicester, I think, Andy?
Yeah, when we were playing Leicester in the season that they won the league.
Yes, yeah, so they basically watched us over there because they obviously took notice of that game and Shaqiri and Arnie, and all of a sudden they started watching more of Stoke and goes there. So when we talk about, we hear the club talking about players getting us on the map, obviously the likes of Peter Crouch would have done that at the time. So it can't be underestimated in terms of a global audience who, let's face it, I mean, they were there in Stoke tops last night, so that's obviously contributing to the financials from there. So it's a big business, and I think you don't quite appreciate just how wide this audience goes. And I know that we said to him, I think we've got 14 states in America listen to this show, and it's like, it's hard to comprehend that, but I just wanted to say, you know, it was really good meeting you both, and yeah, hopefully you'll carry on enjoying the pod. But it was fascinating to speak to you. You missed it actually, Dan. I really wish you could have been there, mate. I think you would have enjoyed it. And the chips and the pie wasn't bad either, to be honest. So quite nice. Anyway, let's go and kick off with the Swansea kind of review now. I mean, we'll try and keep this to about 15, 20 minutes, but there's a lot, hell of a lot to kind of unpack. I mean, I'll give you my thoughts first and I'll let you and Andy battle it out, Dan. But I thought performance-wise, that was as close to a complete performance as I can kind of remember. I think, obviously, the little boy took with me, Josh, you know, he loved it. He really did. And, you know, he finally got to see a win. I mean, when I was in the last supporters council meeting, John Coates said that if he doesn't start to see winning games, that he's not allowed back. Obviously, he said it as a joke, but he's finally seen us win a match, mate. So, yeah, I thought we were completely dominant. We didn't have anything to worry about whatsoever. I was kind of concerned we were going to do the typical Stoke City thing at half time, you know, all the possession, all the chances, and then go and concede early on. So yeah, it was good to kind of see that. And I think all in all, being 3-0, we could have scored more, let's be honest. But I think one thing we'd all say is that we kind of took our foot off the gas. Obviously the players and the coaching staff are thinking, we've got Forest, let's not kind of go too far into this. Just take it easy, really. I mean, I must admit, I said to you, Andy, that if I'm a Swansea fan, and there's very few of them that actually turned up, but if I'm a Swansea fan travelling all that way, I would be royally peed off having just seen my team. They were shocking, weren't they, Andy?
They were shocking. I think I read they only had one shot on target, and that was about the 77th minute. And they were chanting about it, almost taking the mick out of their own team for only managing one shot on target. But considering we, from the start, came out with, all guns blazing out the blocks, there were some players who, for example, Ben Wilmot contributing to the second goal. Throughout the whole game, I thought he did brilliantly at right back, and people have criticised him for his performances there, but he's showing that he's a better option than Tommy Smith at the moment, who is a out-and-out right back.
Yeah, he was brilliant. I mean, there was that cross in the first half that any striker would just throw yourself. I mean, I was like, I said to you, didn't I? I said, was that Wilmot?
Yeah.
I was like, it wasn't Shaqiri. He's just come on to make a brief appearance. I mean, honestly, it was crazy. I mean, I agree with you, mate. When he first played at that right back position, he looked lost. But clearly they've been working on it. And if I'm Tommy Smith, I'm thinking, Christ, I've got to buck my ideas up here. Because if I have a centre back, me now at right back, and I'm the right back, clearly O'Neill's thinking, you ain't doing good enough for you, mate. Look, I'll happily say that, I wasn't so wrong, because I didn't doubt his ability, but he looks a lot more settled. And, we moved that forward. I mean, Baker.
God, what a player.
People were comparing him to Nzonzi, and you know what? He's got a little bit of the Nzonzi about him, absolutely. Now, we don't want to get too far ahead, because we said this about Mbula, if I remember rightly, in his first few games. He looked like, we were talking about him being, the next Makaleli or whatever it was at the time. I remember those comparisons being made. And obviously, we all know how that one panned out. So, all I'm saying is, he looks really positive. He bossed that midfield. Credit to Joe Allen. I think Joe Allen was good as well. Nobody had a bad game, but...
No. I feel like Joe Allen plays a lot better when he's got players around him that are confident. Like, even he was throwing his body towards the ball on... He doesn't do that often, but he's got youngsters around him. He's got Lewis Baker of experience. He's got Jagielka in defence, who's, nearly 40 now. He's got the ability to be able to take a few more risks in his play.
He has, mate. And I think, Dan, what did you think of Bidace, mate? Because, I mean, he blew our minds, I'll be honest with you. Those step-overs he did to their Megda defender, if that was going in, that is a... goal of the season contender. But what did you think of his overall contribution?
He's just an exciting player, and he's just a player that gets you up off his seat, and that's ideally, that's why you watch football. You want people who, like I say, get you excited, people you want, when you walk through the turnstile, you're looking forward to watching them, and he's one of them players, definitely. He just, like say, he step overs, he can go on either side, he can cut inside, he can go round the outside, he can make you think he's going on the outside and cut on the inside. So as a fullback, he must be an absolute nightmare. And he just drives at them as well. The one thing defenders don't like is attackers running at them, and he gets himself into the box as quickly as possible. And it's clever play, really, because he knows with his trickery and his footwork, once he's inside that penalty area, no defender is going to be throwing the foot at him, unless it's like a last ditch thing, because I reckon if he plays more games and he plays like that, there'll be a lot. I mean, I know the penalty didn't come from him directly, but I reckon we'll be winning quite a few of them between now and the end of the season, because he'll bamboozle defenders so much he'll just end up tripping over him.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think obviously I can't remember who it was now, but the right back who got he got booked first off, and it was pretty much, it was on a tightrope, and it was very interesting. A thought kind of occurred to me that how many times does an opposing coach take a player off because he's scared about what a Stoke player might do? And obviously he knew he couldn't make a single tackle, and obviously being on that side, it was the worst possible scenario. So I don't think I think we've got a team full of players who, as you kind of allude to, scare the opposition a little bit. And it, we've always, I mean, how long have we been saying on it on this podcast, and not on this podcast, but before the podcast, where as a team, we have a couple of decent players, your Nick Powells, but pace is something we've always complained about at this club. I would probably argue we've probably got more pace now than we have even in the promotion season. I don't remember this many players of this pace in a squad at the same time. I really don't. So I just hope that they all carry on. And if you know what, if you know, we don't make the playoffs this season, then hopefully we'll have a really fun second half of the season. Something to send the kind of fans away with excitement for next year. And I mean, Bidace, I mean, Villa have got a hell of a player on the hands. If he can keep going, I mean, hopefully, you know, we could keep that type of player with us for next season if needs be. But just one final thing before I go on to a bit more of a negative around this game. Jacob, again, that guy proves people wrong week after week. He wasn't great last night, but he did nothing wrong, but he wasn't great. But again, every season that we've seen him so far, he's always been referred to as the, you know, the Johnny Walters. You know, puts 110% in every single week. No one will ever doubt that. But one thing we've always criticised him over is his actual finishing ability. I'd probably say that he's now added finishing ability to his repertoire. So, I mean, I think he could be 15 goals this season if he carries on.
He could potentially even grab more. Obviously, he's a quick striker. I mentioned last night that you can tell he's definitely improved in his strength. He had defenders pulling him. He wouldn't go down. He doesn't stop running for, I mean, however minutes we played last night, 94, 95 minutes in total. He didn't stop running one bit. And obviously that finish he had, and even the finish against Wigan in the game four, he's generating power and scoring from positions you wouldn't really think a striker would typically score in. And
yeah,
he's definitely turned himself around from when he first came in. And if you're mentioning about pace, you've got Tyrese Campbell, he's got pace. Bidace has got pace. On the bench, you've got DiMaggio, Wright, Phillips. Madger's got a bit of pace to him. Even Baker is quick. And I think we've seen how quick Wilmot actually is at that right back position, because when he was at centre back, he was a little bit more relaxed, but he's getting very stuck in now.
He is, mate. And obviously one player you brought up there, Tyrese, and Dan, I'll probably come to you, mate. It's a shame. It was a nothing tackle. We were discussing this before we went on, but it was a nothing tackle for his injury. And obviously, for anyone who, of course, maybe couldn't attend the game or couldn't listen to it, obviously he's gone off in a leg brace as a precautionary measure. But it's going to be pretty gutting if he's out again already, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, because he was just starting to show form. I mean, I think he's more suited to the role he's been asked to play the last couple of games in this formation. Is it 4-2-3-1? It's either that or 4-3-3, you know, that it's similar kind of, you know, on the right-hand side of the attack. That seems to be where his best games came from previously and where he looks more at home now. And like I say, his confidence, his fitness seem to be up, his sharpness, and it's just, you know, if he's out injured again, it's going to be a real hammer blow for him. And, you know, you feel for him if it is anything long-term. Yeah, with his sort of his mental health side as well, you know, it must be so hard to go in. Luckily, you know, we're not in that kind of that kind of thing doesn't affect us in our day to day roles and stuff, you know. But to fight your way back and come back from a lot, you know, what must have been such a serious knee injury to be out for, you know, 12 months. It wasn't just any old ACL. It's a bad one to be out for that long. And then just as you're getting, you know, to come through all the time where you must be struggling to get your match fitness, struggling to get your sharpness, struggling to get your rhythm, just when that seems to be clicking, to have it all taken away again and you go back to the start, you feel for Tyrese more than anything. If it is, I mean, fingers crossed, it's, you know, maybe nothing, maybe 3 or 4 weeks or whatever, but let's just, you know, let's just pray it's nothing more than, you know, nothing more than that.
Yeah, and I think from a team perspective, mate, on the whole thing, at least this season, at least now, we have people to replace him. That's probably the only silver lining you can probably say about that. Whereas last season, obviously, it completely derailed the season. So I'm confident we would have the quality to replace him. So hopefully not, but, you know, let's be honest. It, if the guy couldn't really carry on walking. So it's not a great sign. So yeah, anyway, it's a shame to end on a kind of negative scale from that. But either way, I think it was an absolutely fantastic game. Not many games I can kind of sit there and go, I wish that I'd never ended.
I mean, I could add a positive rather than end on a negative. We scored a penalty.
Oh, bloody hell. Yeah. I didn't mention that. We scored a penalty.
It doesn't happen, does it?
No, it doesn't, mate. And as soon as Baker hit that, I knew the keeper had gone the right way. And I was like, oh, not again. It's one of those split-second slow-motion things where you think you're convinced he's missed it.
But he placed it perfectly.
Straight in the corner. Yeah. Yeah, he couldn't have done that any better. So, yeah, it's nice to see that again. Hopefully we're on a run of just scoring every single penalty now. But, yeah, thank you for ending that one on a high.
Oh, there's one thing we forgot to mention. Josh Tymon's volley that almost went in as well.
Oh, yeah.
I was just about to say the same thing.
What a volley.
What a strike that was.
A little bit lower and a bit more to the left.
For me, he had one of his quietest games of the season, really. I think he wasn't really involved. It was more the front four, wasn't it, that were doing. Yeah. The midfield was sort of... What I loved about the midfield was the amount of times they won the ball back. It seemed to be every pass into the Swansea midfielders, we just got a toe on the ball, just got in front of them and nicked the ball away.
Then we kept giving it back to Bursic so he can count his pounds.
And then he's like, Alan or Baker would just get a toe to the ball, you know, nick it away from the Swansea midfield, and then it'd roll to Bidais or Powell, and then you'd have, you know, quick one-touch football between two or three of them, you know, the forwards, and then we look to, you know, go from there. And that, you know, that was one of the pleasing elements for me, was the ball, you know, the defence would, you know, obviously they saw the ball at times, as defenders you are going to, aren't you, because it's a safe, you know, the safe option of going back to them. But compared to 95% of matches, they were barely involved. And I think it just shows just, you know, where we were, just how dominant we were, really. I mean, the press, I remember the kickoff, I think we had six players around the centre circle at the kickoff, and I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And as soon as you were, they were just like ready to pounce. And, you know, I mean, I think we mentioned it, and obviously we didn't mention it last week, but Swansea, when it comes to possession and passes made, and say, you know, 10 or more pass sequences, they are light years away. They might be near the bottom of the league, but they are still masses clear of anybody else, including Fulham, in this division this season. And we made them look like they couldn't pass.
Yeah, we played about 200 more passes than them or something like that, and had about 10% more possession. We had 60% possession in total.
Yeah, that is, you know, they never do that. Swansea never come away from games with 40% possession, and then teams outpassing them by that much. It just doesn't happen. And it just shows that, you know, we just never let them settle. And people say, like, oh, they're a poor side. I think we made them look like a poor side.
People can say they're a poor side. They're only 7 points behind us.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? I think
it shows how close the championship is as well.
Yeah, if they'd have won last night, that's a point. And I think that just shows, you know, we've beaten them home and away, and we obviously have proven that we didn't even need Sam Clucas last night, did we?
He didn't really do too much when he came on, though, did he? Either.
No, I think he was
rusty,
gutted.
But he's going to.
Yeah.
He was gutted that the game was already won and he couldn't.
Yeah.
Couldn't,
we said when the penalty was given, we should have just bought Sam Clucas on and let him have it.
Yeah.
That would have been great. Would the pressure have got too much for him, though? That could have gone wrong. That could have.
He thrives on the pressure against teams he's played against, though, doesn't he? Like, look at the game he played against Hull, getting two assists.
He's just like a goal kicker in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's like a field goal, man. He puts on for the penalty and off he goes.
Anyway, let's get on to the man of the match polls. So, Dan, I'll be honest with you, mate. You had some balls with one of these selections. So, anyway, after the game, my phone starts popping up with notifications. And I'm like, okay, let's have a look who is selected here. Okay, so the Twitter options were Bidais, Brown, no problems there. And then you included Nick Powell as the third option for man of the match. And I must admit, mate, I thought you may have been a bit drunk at the time.
It's because he was always involved, that's all. That's all I thought. But I will admit, in hindsight, it was an error.
That's fine, mate. We'll let you off. Anyway, so in terms of the three options then, so Benace, Brown and Powell. In third place was Powell with 0%.
Second, is that the first 0% of the season?
That's the first one of the season. Second was Baker with 45%, and first was Bidace with 51%. And there was a scattering of honourable mentions. So obviously, just to give you an idea, so again, Bergeron Too Cold was Wilmot and Brown, both deserved a mention. Absolutely. Again, Stoke Bloke, Brown has gone for him. Cal went for Brown as well. And I just kind of said, actually, I commented myself, I didn't realize. So I thought, yeah, Bidace and Baker were immense, a completely dominating win. Swansea was simply dreadful from start to finish. Oh, yeah, and one thing we didn't mention, what a great referee!
Oh, brilliant,
brilliant referee.
Best referee we've had all season, maybe of all time in Stoke's history. Gave everything perfect, but he did also give Swansea, you know, three yellow cards in the space of 5 minutes.
Was he really that great? I mean, there was an elbow in the first half. Someone's gone straight through Lewis Baker just before we had the penalty. The actual red card was probably the least of red card out of the three incidents.
Oh, I don't know, mate. I think he
did wail his arm, but then he moved it back to block it.
Yeah. I know. To be honest, if it hits your hand or your arm on the line, you're off, are you?
Yeah. Whether it's intentional or not.
But the point I was making was they could have had two reds before that happened. Lewis Baker. I mean, I'm for anyone who tried it, sent a tweet out on our account about the tackle on Lewis Baker, saying, you know, it's another naughty one. And following on from the ones at Huddersfield the other week, are professionals not meant to have some sort of code of conduct between them where they look after each other on the pitch and there's no, you know, at the end of the day, they're all doing the same job and that, you know, it seems that there's a growing sort of, you know, an increase in dirty little snide challenges. Challenges that are going on.
Let's be honest, though, mate. That's always been there. Look at Roy Keane. Look at, you know, Scholes. That goes back years. They don't
put Roy Keane and Vieira together. They were throwing some.
Yeah, they weren't looking after the Fallon man.
I know. It's a bit off topic and not about Stoke, but you hear Graham Souness with some comments he gave while he pundits. Look at the tackle he put in, like tackles he put in when he was playing.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Dan, but no, I'd say that I don't think it's ever been there, to be honest. But anyway, in terms of another poll, so I did the one on the Facebook group as well. So a couple of comments that kind of come off the back of this as well. But either way, the Facebook one, so it was Bidace, Brown or Baker was the three options that I gave. So third place was Baker with 33 votes. Second was Brown with 49. And first was, no doubt, obviously, Bidace at 107. There was definitely, again, a couple of honourable mentions. So Ben Wilmot once again got mentioned, as did Harwood Ballister, actually. I mean, Ballister was okay. I wouldn't say he did anything wrong or right, but it was okay. But then Alex Thorley comments, so Bidace had a cracking game, skillful, ran and hassled attackers when he lost the ball. But for me, Baker was man of the match with Wilmot a close second. Both of them ran the midfield in defence. Baker's passing was pinpoint. Wilmot was solid. Both of them were everywhere on the pitch, winning the ball back and creating attacks. And then John, I'm not going to pronounce your surname. I'll slaughter it, sorry. But Bidace was different gravy tonight and showed his quality. He made a nuisance of himself, popping up all over the pitch and is a real handful. Just glad he plays for us. So, thanks to everyone who's voted anyway. Any other observations to make from Swansea, guys, before we move on to the news?
Just on the note of the polls, as the season's gone on, obviously we're collating the points that people are earning, you know, we're winning from the Man of the Match polls. As it stands, Josh Tymon is top, 233 points. Mario Vrancic is in second, 217. Harry Suter, amazingly, is third with 197, even though he hasn't played.
He's been out for about half of the season.
Yeah, so it just shows, you know, I think he was well on the way, the leader when he was injured. Ben Wilmot, after last night, is now up into fourth place on 189 points.
Wow.
And then you've got Jacob Brown and Romain Sawyers, joint fifth on 187. So it's actually with 25 points for a win, well, for a man of the match first place, you know, there's six players there all within. I mean, Harry Suter's not going to improve on his, but there's still five other players there with Sawyer's backs in the next week or so, within a couple of man of the matches of taking top spot there.
Be interesting to see how that pans out, mate. But I definitely think we're going to see, you know, Bidace, Baker. I think Powell will definitely start getting up there again. So it's going to be tight, but we'll make sure we get to the training ground at the end of the season, mate, and give that to the player who wins it. So
training ground, we're getting on the pitch, mate. We're getting the final game of the
last
season.
Last game of the season.
We'll keep a close on, though, yeah? Nobody
depends whether
to
we go
that.
To playoffs or not.
Right, yeah, well, I think we will, mate, I think we will. Anyway, let's leave it there for Swansea. Let's move on to this week's Stoke City news.
So, following on from the FA Cup win against Wigan last weekend, the fifth round draw took place, and we've been given the glamour tie of a trip to Crystal Palace at the beginning of March. Good stuff, lads. We enjoy that one.
Well, it could be a bit of a redemption day, couldn't it? I think we'll want to go there and show them what we can do. But as we know, our form at Palace away isn't the best.
It's pretty dreadful, mate. I think it was either you or Dan sent a graphic through, and I saw it was like play 10, 1, none. Something stupid like that. It was pretty horrendous.
I think the last time I remember one game when we were in the Premier League, it was about a 4-0 loss to them. Or something like that.
I mean, the only saving grace we could have, really, let's be honest, is Jack Butland playing in goal. I mean, that's the only.
No, I'm not having this Butland hate. No, I'm not having it. I'm not happy.
He just needs to do what he did against Millwall with a phobia, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think the guy. Yeah, he was always a committed professional when he was here. His time didn't. You know, he made a lot of mistakes towards the end, but. They weren't, you know, there was never a question of his attitude for me. I think he always tried his best. I think he gets
brilliant professional.
If you want to direct hate at people from that era of this club, there's many more people who should get it before Jack Butland, in my opinion.
Oh, but don't get me wrong. I am not doubting what he contributed. He contributed plenty of own goals and plenty of fluffs towards the end of his career. He contributed more than enough. But no, in all seriousness, yeah, he was a good player. It was time for him to go. Unfortunately, psychologically, he'd just gone for whatever reason after that injury. I think, well, I was speaking to one of the guys who was obviously from America last night, and he said, you know, he used to be a goalkeeper, and said that, you know, when he had his injury, again, psychologically, it's something in the back of your mind, you never feel confident again. And obviously Jack's doing that on a high scale level. So, you know, he can't hide. So, yeah, Luke, you know, again, I say tongue-in-cheek the whole hope Jack Butland plays. You know, I hope he has a good game. As long as we win, I don't really care. But, yeah, I think the main thing for me, mate, I think it's not a glamour tie. I know you said you glamour tie. I know you probably, again, tongue-in-cheek. But I would have taken it at home. I think away, we've lost. Andy, save your money, mate. Don't bother going.
Home and away, no matter what, mate.
Yeah, I think if you can be a part-time supporter, mate, or go and see the Vale that day if they're playing,
oh, God.
Then go for it. But
I'll actually give you an answer on when you said how can I afford it. It's because of my age, I can actually get tickets
for the under 11s.
No, not under 11s. But for example, with my Nottingham ticket, it's about 13 quid cheaper for my age than an adult.
Bloody hell, did you like kids in young these days? That's not bad. It's all right. So in answer to your question, mate, it's a bit of a kind of tie for me. Would I have rather a Boreham Wood? Actually, no, I don't think I would. I know you could say it's an easier team to get through, but I suppose a team at that level got nothing to lose. They proved they can knock out a good team. I'd say not overly impressed, but whatever. I think if we go out of the cup but manage to go for a playoff place, I think everybody would accept that, wouldn't they?
But yes, I think, yeah, we could have, we were sitting here last week, weren't we, saying if we can get past Wigan, we could have a big tie maybe away at Manchester United, but, you know, they didn't do their part.
About Manchester United. Ronaldo apparently scores all of his penalties.
Not anymore, he doesn't.
Nope.
But yes, obviously we were thinking, you know, we could end up with a tie that, you know, Manchester United or Liverpool, something like that, you know, get a big, you know, Tottenham, you know, get £1 million plus gate receipts, £250,000 TV revenue, and we've ended up with Crystal Palace away, which didn't quite fall into the same brackets. However, we've got decent, you know, we've beaten, well, in the last couple of seasons in cup games, we've beaten Wolves away, Villa away, Watford away. So, you know, Crystal Palace fall into that kind of bracket. You know, we've got a history, recent history of winning these kind of games.
Okay, well, let's see what happens, mate. Hopefully, you know, again, we've got nothing to lose, I suppose. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah. So, yes, moving on, we've obviously got quite a lot of players out on loan this week, and we've added some more. I mean, Lewis Macari, grandson of obviously former Stoke manager Lou Macari. He's gone on loan to Dundalk for 6 months. So he's gone straight into their side. Apparently their first game is Friday night and they are chasing some silverware this year, I believe. So that'll do some good. Got some pressure situations there he's going to be going and playing in. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on there. Eddie Jones has gone on loan to Altrincham, who've obviously got... and Pat Jarrett has gone on loan to Telford. Both clubs have got quite good links with Stoke and, you know, recent players. I know Ryan Shuttle went to Altrincham. Adam Porter went there. I believe Tom Sparrow's been to Telford already as well. So, yeah, there's quite a few. You know, there seems to be clubs that we link up with quite well with our youngsters. Some not so great news, though, is obviously Peter Atibo has been injured for a long time at Watford. Alfie Doughty has now joined him on the Stoke City injury jinx. So, yeah, he injured ankle ligaments and he's out for roughly 6 weeks. Now, it was initially reported in the Cardiff Press that he was out for the season. And then it was quickly rehashed as it was a typo. And it's 6 weeks, not 6 months, that he's out for. Which is a good thing because he started actually really quite well. The Cardiff fans have taken to him and said he's, you know, he's exciting and he's playing really well in the couple of games that he did get in. So hopefully, because I know there's no real obligation or ability to purchase him for Cardiff after this loan spell. So hopefully, you know, he can get a few games under his belt, and obviously Stoke wants him back in the summer. So he'll be good competition for Josh Tymon, whether that be a left back or maybe, like I say, further up the pitch as well, if we continue with a 4-2-3-1. So, yeah, it's unfortunate for Alfie. Let's hope he can get fit sooner rather than later. And another player who's had some unfortunate news this week is Connor Taylor. It's came out on this morning, on the day that we're recording, from his manager. He's on loan at Bristol Rovers. I know we had some audio from Bristol Rovers fan last week, didn't we? Gascast podcast, who said, you know, his first name on the team sheet and how great he is doing that. But it turns out that he missed the game in December and he was just put down to sort of injury at the time. But it turns out he's sort of like an irregular heart rhythm that was picked up. He was sort of, his heart was racing sort of in the water before the game there. And then he was named in the starting 11 for their game in midweek this week. But he was actually pulled out in the warm-up because the situation came back again. Yeah, so they've said that he's going to need surgery on his heart. But from what the quotes from Barton saying, that it's, you know, he's like, he can either get it in the summer or they might bring it forward. You know, now that it's happened a second time, they may bring the surgery forward. But it probably would end his season. But it's not like a career ender at this stage. It's quite a routine, just needs a little surgical...
It's a good job they picked it up, mate, because obviously there's been a bit of an increase on players collapsing, and obviously, you know, I know it happens in the stands an awful lot now, but, you know, the last thing you want is a young lad like that running around the pitch and all of a sudden he just hits the deck. You know, at least they found it and they, you know, they can sort it out. Yeah, and it ends his season, but you know, he could, whoever spotted that or however it's been spotted, then, you know, I assume just on routine checks that they do for all the players, you know, it's a bloody good job they found it, really, isn't it? Let's be honest. Could have been a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, because let's face it, football's football, but somebody's health is far and away more important than any any football match. So, yeah, it's, like I say, for somebody, like I say, so young as well, he's only 19, and to have that picked up is, like I say, very is so important. And, you know, hopefully he can have that surgery and, you know, correct what the issue is. And obviously now moving on just to the round off the loanees. Roundup, we've got Benny Cofobes on loan to Millwall. It's been a while since we checked in with the Millwall fans to see how he's getting on. But this week we are doing so. Let's have a listen to this.
This is Nick Hart reporting from Achtung Millwall Podcast, speaking about Benny Cofobes on loan to Millwall for the season, of course. Benny has really made the forward position his own and is almost the first choice pick now for the Lions. One thing I would say with Bennick that's really struck me is he never lets up for effort. He'll always give you 100%, which is an essential at the Den. Nothing less than 100% will ever do at Zampa Road. He does have some inconsistency in the finishing at times. For example, the win recently, a good win for the Lions actually, over West Bromwich Albion just a week or so ago, 2-0 win. Bennett was having a mare of a performance. It was almost as though his first touch was, my first touch might be better, listeners. And I was about to kind of condemn him for, you know, having a poor performance, only for him to pop up late, and produce the cherry on the cake, with a great finish, very coolly done from a breakout from defence. And you get these little moments of top quality mixed in with, some, as I said, some inconsistent finishing at times. But overall, he's a very popular boy at the Den, and I think that, he responds to the crowd like him. And yes, you can talk about, you know, sometimes he'll miss chances, but when he does score, and he's been scoring reasonably regularly, including against Crystal Palace in the FA Cup recently in a 2-1 loss, and, you know, 6 goals, I think, for the season so far. And he's very much seen now as an essential pick in the Mill 11, to the level where you kind of forget as a Millwall fan that he's on loan to us. And that's always a bit unsettling when you realise that this player who seems to be very much one of us is actually is on the HP, he's on the loan to us, so we've got to keep in mind that factor. Overall, good season for Bennick so far, and let's hope that continues, because the Lions season has drifted on to mid-table obscurity rather, and if that's going to change, he needs to start finding the back of the net much more regularly perhaps than he has done of late. Overall though, I'd be giving him marks out of 10, probably about between a 6 and a 7 out of 10.
Cheers for that, Nick. Interesting, yeah, to see Benny. Obviously sounds quite familiar from his time at Stoke. You know, general play, gets involved but doesn't quite score enough goals to sort of, you know, push your team on enough as a central striker. But yeah, let's, you know, fair play to him. Let's hope he sort of, you know, carries on, finds the net a bit more frequent. Anyway, moving on, our under-23s played Reading on Monday in the league. Since we've recorded the pod, before you're listening to it, they will have played Fulham in the League Cup. So let's hope they've got a win there. But yeah, they managed to get a point at Reading 1-1. Tashan Oakley-Booth opened the scoring, but we were pegged back. So we picked a point up in the league, and yes, this week we've got Southend away on Monday in the League Cup. That's a 7 p.m. kickoff. The under-18s played Middlesbrough at home last weekend, lost 2-1 to a 92nd-minute goal. It was actually 0-0 after 75 minutes. But Middlesbrough opened the scoring. Then Nathan Lowe equalised in the 82nd minute. Because Middlesbrough grabbed the winner in injury time. Leaves the 10th in the under-18s Premier League North. Now, we've got a bit of a tasty game this week. You know, an old rival is appearing. We host Arsenal at home this week at Clayton Wood, 11 a.m. kickoff in the Premier League Under 18 Cup. So anyone who's not going to Forest can head down to the training ground and maybe do the Wenger or something at the Arsenal's Under 18s if you want.
I must admit, mate, you mentioned Tashan, if you don't mind me interrupting. So, what do you think was going on with Tashan? He didn't want to go on loan to Burton, but he's happy to rot in the under-23s. I don't quite understand this one.
I don't know. Maybe his thought process. The only thing I can think of is this, with all the COVID that's been around and players dropping in and out, maybe as he thought, I'll stay here and I might get a chance in the first team. And I backed himself to take that chance when it arrived, rather than going out to Burton where he's out of the manager's eye line, so to speak, even in training.
Away is he though, mate? I mean, let's be honest, that midfield we've got, how far down that pecking order is he? I think it's a big mistake, mate. I mean, he's done nothing so far to show, to be fair, he's hardly ever fit, but he's done nothing so far to show that he's even close to being championship level midfielder. So why not go on loan, sparkle for Burton or whatever? Like, you know, a lot of players have gone out and done. And then you'll prove yourself away from the club. Or you know what? If you aren't good enough, then earn yourself a contract at another club. He's not going to do that in the under-23s.
No, because like I said, there has been interest in him, and the Burton wanted to take him. And if it was me, on the face of it, I probably would have gone. Sounds like you would have gone. But yeah, obviously he did. He just didn't fancy that move for whatever reason. Yeah, just last bit of news as well. The ladies, their game was postponed last week and they are away to Brighouse Town this Sunday. But yeah, that rounds up all the news.
Lovely. Yeah, cheers, Dan. Thank you. Yeah, let's look ahead to Forest this weekend. So this is a section that I must admit I used to do, but I think you guys put me to shame, I'm going to be honest. You know, it's a bit like a head-to-head in its own right. I know you both love to look for quirky little stats and everything like that, so I'm very happy to leave it to you two. Andy, what have you got for us this week, mate? Anything interesting?
Few interesting facts. Nottingham Forest have only lost two of their last 19 home league games against Stoke, but they are winless in the last three home games, which is two draws and one loss. Stoke are actually looking to record a league double over Nottingham Forest for the first time since the opening four matches of the 1954-55 season. Nottingham Forest have won four of their last five home matches, which is as many as their previous 21 combined. And Stoke have won the last championship match 3-0 against Swansea, as we know, which is the third time that we've won by a 3-goal margin in the last two seasons. And we haven't won by that many goals away since November 2020 in a 3-0 over Reading. And the final one is that Stoke's Lewis Baker, who has two goals and five championship appearances this season, is as many as is managed in his last 46 championship games combined, where he played for Reading, Leeds, Middlesbrough and Sheffield Wednesday.
Lovely effort, mate. Well done. Dan, can you beat that? Or have you got anything
Let's
to
see
add?
What you've got. Let a battle commence.
No, I've got a slightly different numbers on the Forest home wins. They've won six of the last seven, including wins over Arsenal and Leicester, with the loss and then that run being to Huddersfield 1-0. And just a quirky one that I found. I've duplicated a couple of yours, mate, but the one that I've got here that you haven't mentioned is last season we drew 1-1 at the City Ground. Josh Tymon setting up Rabbi Matondo, because we know Josh Tymon loves playing against Nottingham Forest. That game was 10 months ago, but of the starting lineup for Stoke, Josh Tymon is the only player likely to start from that team on Saturday.
Not even
Joe Allen. That team was?
Yeah, do you know, that team was Adam Davies in goal.
Sold.
He's gone. He's a goner. So Tommy Smith.
Probably replaced by Wilmot.
Danny Bart.
Gone.
Harry Suter.
Injured.
Reece Norrington-Davies.
Sheffield United.
John Obi Mikel.
God knows what's going on with him.
Rabbi Matondo.
Back at, he was at Schalke, but he's in Netherlands now, isn't he?
Sam Clucas.
No.
Jordan Neil. Thompson. Josh Diamond.
Definitely he'll play.
And Stephen Fletcher.
It just shows how much we've improved in the space of 10 months, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, even the bench. The bench was Kieran Coates, Jordan Cousins, Eddie Jones, Dan Malone, Christian Norton, Blondie, Jesus. Connor Taylor, Sam Vokes, and...
Oh, my God.
And Jacob Brown.
How many injuries did we have there?
Horrendous bench that is.
Do we tell you the players who were missing? I wonder if we had... Did we have some sort of COVID outbreak here? Because missing, it was Joe Allen, Tyrese Campbell, James Chester, Joe Clark, Nathan Collins, Alfie Doughty, Morgan Fox, James McLean, and Tashan Oakley-Booth. All injured, apparently. Good.
Wow.
Wow. That's a pretty...
So it shows that's at least worst. At some point in the season we'll have a bad injury crisis.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. Yeah, that's a bit of an eye-opener. I didn't
realize that is a nice fact.
Yeah, I must admit, Dan, I think you might get the credit here, mate.
I'll give him the credit for that.
This week.
Yeah, I just think for 10 months to go, like, a game that was only 10 months ago, you've only got one player left. Just shows, you know, the rebuilding task and the... well, not one player left, but one player likely to start.
Yeah.
Just shows, you know, the what Michael O'Neill's doing, really, the job he's doing.
Lovely. Well, speaking of a man on form and, you know, a man doing well, Graham McGarry went for a 1-0 Stoke win. Now, obviously, he didn't quite get a scoreline right, but he's definitely got the result right. So let's see what he's got to predict this week. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if he gives Stoke an actual win against Forest, but let's see what he's got to say anyway.
Hi there, you Potters podcast people. Hello there, it's Graham McGarry back again after the international break. I hope you enjoyed your little breather from your football. This is Graham McGarry with that Potter's prediction. Let's hope we get it right this weekend. Stoke City 2, Hull City 0. Stoke 1, West Brom 0. Stoke are ready to win at home. 2-0 for the Potters. Welcome along once again to the Potter's prediction. Well, we got Potter's through last week, didn't we, in the FA Cup with quite an easy task in the end. Now they're going to turn their attentions after a terrific 3 points in midweek when they just brushed aside Swansea with ease. They're going to turn their attention now to playing the informed team at the moment in the Championship. Never mind the top two, Nottingham Forest are the team to beat. And Stoke City were hoping that their good improved form can get them a result and keep their hopes of a playoff place very much alive. It's going to be lively at the City Ground, there's no doubt about that. But Stoke City have got a good squad, they're up for it, and things are just dropping in nicely. It could be time for a surprise, you know, this weekend. It could be Nottingham Forest 1, Stoke City 2.
Brilliant, Graham. Thank you very much, mate. A very, very ambitious 2-1 win. I mean, I'd love that. I mean, that set us up really nicely for the upcoming game. So fingers crossed, mate, you can be right. They're much appreciated, as always. Now, as always, we'd like to spoil you with audio. So this week, Rich from the 1865 Nottingham Forest podcast has been in touch. Just give us a bit of an overview of what we can obviously expect against Forest this weekend. Let's see what he had to say.
Hello there, it's Rich Ferraro here from the Nottingham Forest podcast 1865. Obviously, we've got a match coming up this weekend and it's going to be an interesting one. I think the thing that could play into Stoke's hands is the fact that Forest are coming out of a really, really big week. Obviously, you'll be aware of us beating Premier League Leicester in the Cup on Sunday, and Forest were pretty strong in that match, although they were able to tone things down a little bit in the second half, having taken such a strong lead. Well, they didn't really, and they kept going. So that's going to have tired out the squad. Then tonight, I'm recording this on Wednesday, and we've got a match against Blackburn away. So that's going to be pretty energy sapping as well. In terms of what you can look out for from Forest, well, Joe Worrall came back as the captain on Sunday against Leicester, and he was a little bit ring rusty, but you could see his total commitment. However, it's not entirely sure he's going to be able to play three games in a week because he had broken ribs, and apart from the injury, he actually wasn't able to train at all while he was out. On the other hand, we have got Keenan Davis up front, who's made a really big impression since joining on loan from Aston Villa, and it's quite possible that his form will mean that there's no place in the team for Sam Surridge. So I think that your former striker is more likely to make an appearance from the bench. And then in terms of the match itself, you know what? I never know how Stoke are going to do. I can never predict how things are going to go for you. What's really interesting is the fact that you've got some good young players coming through. And of course, Wright Phillips is the one who's kind of caught the headlines. But I get the impression that O'Neill's doing a really long rebuilding job there. So it's difficult to kind of predict what's going to happen. I've sat there when Forest have been doing the same. So let's just see. I think that the players that you really need to look out for, the man who's really in form, Brennan Johnson captures all the headlines, Jed Spencer's alongside him. But for me, the man who's making Forest tick in terms of going forward at the moment is James Garner, on loan from Man United, who sits in either a number six role, but he can also play as an eight and has in fact played as a 10 on quite a few occasions. But his delivery, especially from set pieces, is just outstanding. So he's going to be the one you need to keep quiet. May the best team win, as long as it's Forest.
Lovely. Thank you, Rich. Much appreciated, mate. Always good to hear, as I said, the opposition views. So that takes us on to, obviously, our predictions, really. So, Dan, I mean, I'd normally come straight to you. Now, obviously, I've seen your team that you sent to me earlier on. And I must admit, if I'm not mistaken, and feel free to correct me here, I'm pretty sure that me and you chose the exact same team, didn't we?
No, there was one alteration, wasn't there? You kept in Jaden Philogene Bedeis.
Yes, that's right.
And I decided, with the caveat underneath of he was fantastic, but he put such a massive shift in, I think the bench and an explosive 30 minutes at the end, if needed, is going to be more impactful to us then maybe 60, 70 minutes where he might be a bit more tired. So I'm bringing DiMaggio in.
Okay.
But yeah, so, Madger up front, DiMaggio and Brown on the wings, Powell, and then Alan Baker in the defence and goalkeeper as they were on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to change that team, isn't it, really? And I know you would probably go with the exact same team if you didn't think we needed a bit of a rest for him. So, yeah, totally get it. Andy, is your team too much different? I mean, I believe you played Phil Jagielka behind the striker and the defence, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
well,
mate.
I've got someone else in Jagielka's family at centre-back, clearly. But it's pretty much it's the exact same team, pretty much. Well, it is the exact same team. Bedeis on the left, Brown on the right, Madger up front. Thing is, with Campbell being out, if Campbell was fit, you put Campbell on the right and Brown up front. But after playing so well against Swansea, I don't think you can really change it, can you?
No, I don't think you can, mate. I mean, not a single player played badly, so you can't drop them. So I think the majority of Stoke fans, I mean, obviously we'll put this out on Twitter as well, but I don't think anyone's going to really disagree with us, to be honest with you. I mean, there'll always be one, but I can't see many. So score predictions then, guys. Dan, what are you going for, mate? I think it's a bit of a tough one to call this.
Well, I think there'll be goals. I think there's two sides who look to attack, but in slightly different ways, maybe. I mean, looking at the stats here, you've got that, you know, Stoke, we seem to be more right. If you look at XG now, I know that's not that a lot of people don't like that, but we've sort of like we're outscoring ourselves in open play. We've scored 27 goals in open play, but XG says we should have only scored 22. So we're quite clinical there. Set pieces though, we should have scored 12, but we've only scored 7. So Mario Vrančić has been robbed of about 5 assists by the sounds of it. So I'm glad he'll be happy with that. From all them corners he was putting
in. It's also penalties that we've missed.
Yeah. That'll be them. Forest, again, they should have scored 27 for open play and 8 from corners. eight from set pieces, sorry, which is one more than XG. But the real thing is, the Forest have only done 140 turnovers. I know we talked about this last week, didn't we? I introduced this, where turnovers within 40 yards of the opposition's goal, which is sort of a way of getting at how high you do your press and how successful your press is. Well, Forest have only done that 140 times, managed to turn it over, and Stoke have managed 50% more than that, 209 times, which seems to me that we are looking to get on the front foot at teams a lot more, and we're trying to push up, whereas Forest are allowing teams to come on to them, by the looks of it, and then break on them. The fact also highlighted by the fact that Forest have got a league high of 64 direct attacks, which is attacks which start from your own half and end with a shot or touch inside the box, with the passes basically going forward quickly. So it looks like Forest sit back, get the ball, and then launch on the counter-attack. Quite direct, looking at maybe getting in pacey runners in or hitting target men and having people running off them. So it looks to me, is our pressing going to be, are we going to be able to do the pressing that we did on Tuesday for the second time in 4 days? That's going to be the key to me.
Well, if you've got Jacob Brown in your team, he can run for God knows how long.
Yeah. So it's like, are we, if we can press and press high and keep running and running, like say Jacob Brown, if his, you know, Duracell battery that he is, if he can keep going and, you know, maybe that's why I'm bringing maybe Wright Phillips in as just fresh legs, just so we can push and push. Nick Powell's actually really good at the press, goes sort of under the radar a lot because he doesn't sort of sprint around, but he just knows when to step onto people.
I noticed in the Swansea game, Baker was pressing quite high as well.
Yeah,
and he's holding.
Yeah, and him and Allen seem to be really on the ball, didn't they, on Tuesday night? Mm-hmm. Really. If we can continue that and we haven't got the fatigue of trying to do it, like, say, three games in a week, then it's our, you know, that's going to be massive to us. And I think we're going to see goals either way. I'm going to sit on the fence and say 2-2, though.
Oh, okay. I'm going to keep mine short and sweet. I'm going to go for Stoke announcing their march on the playoffs to the whole world and making everyone sit up with a 3-1 win.
Ooh. I'm sticking with Graham McGarry. I'm not going to say if it's what I said, but
2-1. Oh, not you as well.
I'm going 2-1. It's with a team like Swansea, not Swansea. God, we played Swansea. A team like Nottingham, obviously, they're also on a playoff push. They're going to want to press high, obviously, with the attacks that Dan's mentioned. They're pretty direct with it. But with our pressing, we've got Brown. If you bring Wright Phillips in, he's going to press high with Brown. Bidet can do it. Powell can do it. Baker can do it. They can all pretty much do high pressing. But I feel like if Brown can get in those positions he's been getting into, he could grab maybe both goals for us.
Yeah, well, it'll certainly be interesting, mate, because, I mean, if I look at who we've got after Forest, I mean, we're at home to Birmingham. I'm not being funny, right? But I would rather us go and full pelt against Forest, because Forest are the team that we need to take points off. They're one of them teams. So, look, if we have to go and beat Forest whatever way and absolutely exhaust ourselves, we can make changes. You know, we've got a week then before the next match, and we can make changes against Birmingham, and we should still have too much for Birmingham. So I think if there's any game to put your best team out and just give it 100%, it's going to be Forest. We've got winnable games. I mean, bloody
Bournemouth, you know, away.
Yeah, I mean,
Luton at home, I think, could still be a tough one.
It's going to be tough, mate. I mean, you know, God willing and all that, but. you know,
Nathan Jones pumping
his
chest.
He's not going to make it easy. And you know what? As much as people don't like him, in fairness to the guy, he's got Luton doing well. I mean, they won like 3-1 again the other night.
I think he really suits Luton.
He does.
I think it's just the way that he is. Luton have needed a manager like that. And look at how he was in his first spell. It's a manager Luton need. And to be fair, without Nathan Jones, what happened to him?
Yeah. I think he maybe struggled with the egos at Stoke.
Yeah, with some of the players we had when he came in.
The worst thing he probably did is bring people like Ndiaye back into the mix. Because he probably, as good a player as Ndiaye was, and I understand why he probably did it, because he thought this guy could get us out of the division. I think he maybe lost a lot of respect in the dressing room from players who had seen how Ndiaye had been, especially that game at Leeds. Yeah, and I think he maybe divided the dressing room straight away with that kind of decision. And I think that's why when you see Michael O'Neill came in, it was straight away wanting anyone who disrespected the club, anyone who'd shown any inkling of not wanting to be here, it was like, well, you're out, I don't care, you go play on loan, you go play, we'll get you a free transfer, whatever. You just don't, you're not being around the place. Anyone who was deemed maybe toxic was shipped straight out. And I think maybe that was Nathan Jones's downfall. I think he created himself a divide in the camp and he lost respect from a lot of the players, maybe from that decision alone.
Yeah, it is, mate. And I must admit, I'm going to get some audio put together for the Luton podcast. I think it's going to be quite funny. I'm going to see how many times I can get God willing from all these different interviews. I'm going to put them into one audio clip for us. But just want to have a very quickly before we kind of tie things up again, just at the fixtures, because I've mentioned them now, and I just want to highlight just the opportunity we've got here. So let's just say, however we do it, we get through Forest with something from the game. We've then got Birmingham City at home, we've got Luton at home, and then we've got Bournemouth away. Okay, not easy games, but certainly not impossible. Now, obviously, we've got Palace, let's forget that. But in the league, as soon as you get past these next couple of games, home to Blackpool, away to Barnsley, you know, away to Peterborough. I'm not being funny, but we should win all three of them.
Yep.
And then away to Cardiff, I don't know. And then home to Millwall. And then we've got a bit of a tricky run.
We've got a bit of a buffer in between.
Yeah, because we've still got QPR and Blackburn and West Brom, Sheffield United.
And then to finish the season, you've got, obviously, Bristol at home. We lost to them away, but could do well against them. And then the last four games are
all play teams in the playoffs. Blackburn, going for playoffs. So we need to take points here in those games so we can go into those final games in a good position to actually maybe make it a very tasty three or four matches here. So, yeah, interesting.
An interesting point as well is that after the Birmingham, I know we've got a week off, haven't we, after the Forest game before Birmingham. After that, there is no 7-day break between games until May for us. And your defenders, your 3-game weeks, it doesn't really affect you. Obviously, it doesn't affect your goalkeeper very much. It doesn't really affect your defenders. It's your runners, isn't it? It's your attacking players who need that sort of that initial burst of energy, that burst of speed.
I feel like we'll almost definitely rotate the wingers.
And that's the thing. The good thing for us and the sensible thing the manager's done, he's got himself options up front. Mm-hmm. So when these games are coming thick and fast, players are getting a little bit leggy, they can have a game off. They can be brought back in again 2 games later. Yeah, we haven't got to keep putting the same side out because the reserves are, you know, that much further down the pecking order ability-wise than the team who are at the first 11. We've got a lot of players who can be in that first 11 now.
It's going to be I think everyone said it's going to be an interesting end to this season, mate. So, interesting. But let's see how close, again, that we get. You know, we mentioned about the 70 points thing the other week and all that. I'd be very, very intrigued to see how things go.
Well, don't forget your little quiz, by the way.
Oh, you know? I forgot about that this quiz. Week.
Yeah, mate, I completely
What's
forgot.
What's the topic this week, Dan?
So, we've taken a twist this week. I'm giving you the answers and you've got to put them in the order.
Oh,
God.
So, these are 8 Republic of Ireland footballers who've played for Stoke this century. I'm going to give you the 8 names. You've got to put them, rank them 1 to 8 in how many appearances they made for Stoke. Okay.
Oh, we're going to be so bad at this, but go on.
In alphabetical order, Clive Clark, Rory Delap. So do you want to write these down so you can...
Yeah, I'm just writing them down now. Yeah.
Yeah, Clive Clark, Rory Delap, Graham Kavanagh, Liam Lawrence, James O'Connor, John Walters, Glenn Whelan, Mark Wilson.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, the number one has 338 appearances. Number eight has 125.
Okay, so let's go from worst to best then for this one. So the person who the least, I'd say... That's Clark. I mean, Wilson or Clark? Who would
Wilson? Wilson would have played in a lot of positions.
Same thing with him.
He was multi-purpose.
Just to let you know, what I want you to do is talk amongst yourselves, get your eight, then come back to me at the end with all eight in the audio and I'll tell you how many you got.
God.
I'm putting Clive Clark at the bottom. It might not be. Delap played enough for us because of his long throws. Cav played a good couple of seasons for us. Lawrence obviously did.
Yeah, Wilson obviously played.
So I'm going to go Clive Clark. I'm going to go James O'Connor next.
Okay.
I think it might be a bit brave, but because James did play a number of games.
James O'Connor is one of those players I haven't really heard much of.
The man who scored two goals in the playoff semi-final at Cartwells. One and a half. We come off with Laurie's arse.
So after that, I'm going to put Kavanagh.
Okay.
Oh, this is tricky, though, this is. There can't be much between some of these players.
There can't be much between, like, Whelan and Delap, can there, really?
So I'm going to go Mark Wilson next.
Yep.
Wilson next, and then... Oh,
I'd say Delap played less than Whelan. I know that sounds bold.
Okay, so Delap, then who would have played more? So Lawrence after Delap?
Because he would have Lawrence played less. Yeah. Maybe Delap played more because of his long throws, like you've mentioned. He has really stiffed us on this one, hasn't he?
Delap, Lawrence, and then I'm going to go...
Whelan at the top.
Whelan, Walters. I've got Whelan, then Walters.
Walters at the top. I forgot about Walters in the list, to be honest.
Okay, so Dan, I think we're going to go with this list, mate. We're not confident at all here.
It's one of them where it's like...
So we're going worst to best, okay?
Yep.
Okay, so in last place... Clive Clark. Second to last, James O'Connor. Third to last, Graham Kavanagh. Fourth is Mark Wilson. Next is Rory Delap. Next is Liam Lawrence. Second most appearances, Glenn Whelan. And the number one for appearances, John Walters.
Right. Would you like me to read them from the bottom up?
Yep.
Go on.
In eighth place with 125 games, Liam Lawrence.
Really?
That's a surprise.
Wow. Okay.
That's really stiff the list.
Andy, just a bit.
In seventh place with 178 games, Mark Wilson.
Wow.
In sixth place with 208 appearances, Rory Delap.
Oh man, we
in fifth place with 211 appearances, James O'Connor.
Weren't too far off with that one then.
Not awful.
In fourth place with 245 appearances, Graham Kavanagh.
Oh, okay.
In third place with 264 games, the man you put at the bottom of the list, Clive Clark.
Wow.
God.
And then...
We've got the top two right, though. Just to put this out, we got the top two right, but in what order?
Well, 338 appearances, top man. 271 appearances was second. You said Walter's top, Wheel in second.
Yeah.
It was actually Walter's in second, oh, and Glenn sake. Whelan was top. So you got 0 out of 8.
Does this quiz have to go into the podcast?
That's crazy. I can't believe how bad it was.
It was one of them, though. It's like, it's one of those obscure questions.
It's guesswork, though. Well, Liam Lawrence, what it shows is that Liam Lawrence probably has a lot of memories from his time that you feel like he was involved.
He's done a lot in the games that he played.
And Clive Clark played 264 games that you've obviously forgotten because you didn't think he played that many.
I really didn't. I mean, I remember him. He was one of the only. Well, he was a good left back for us. I remember him well. But you're right, mate. I think that's a very fair comment. It's memories more than anything else. And obviously, if you look at our, that's funny. If you look at our list, the top four that we had was Delap, Lawrence, Whelan, and Walters. So they're very, very fresh in the mind. So our perception of those players, clearly not, you know, reality. So. But yeah, thanks for that. That was an interesting one, mate, did badly. But yeah, it's good.
Does this mean we have detention now for failing?
Yes.
We're going to go and see Andy's favourite team, Port Vale. So.
He had to sneak one in.
Mate, I tell you what, we're gonna make a pact here. We're not going to mention Port Vale for you anymore. I mean, just
until the next podcast.
Until the next, yeah, of course, yeah.
On one condition.
Go on.
You don't go again.
Okay. Cross my heart and hope to die.
Bloody crew next.
Unless it's a Stoke away game.
Yes. Well, anyway, I think that's a very good way of ending the podcast, us being humiliated. So thank you very much, Dan. thank you very much, Andy. Always good to speak to you. Well, most
appreciate
of the time. We'll catch everybody. Actually, no, one thing we should probably say, Dan. Sorry, actually, before we do that. You've been got a couple of specials, haven't we, that we've been doing in the background and you've been doing. I'm not sure if you decided on the order yet, mate, but do you want to just let everyone know kind of what's coming up in the kind of coming weeks, mate?
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned a while back that we were going to see, Carl Dickinson, didn't we? And me and Andy went up to a Hanley Town game. We were invited up there by Ron McElreevy, the chairman. We had a really good day out, really, didn't we, Andy? It was pretty good.
And then when we left, he scored like 4 goals in a space of like 5 minutes.
Yeah, we left just before the goal onslaught. But yeah, we had to really enjoy it. It was a really good day out. And there's a lot going on there. A lot of vital stuff around men's mental health as well. So we sort of dip into that in the pod that comes up. And, you know, we talk about that. We've also got, you know, a brief bit of time with Carl as well. Talk about his time at Stoke and his general career and everything as well. His hopes for the future. So that was great. And we've also been speaking with Simon Lowe, author, who's got a new Stoke book out. It was a Stoke book that came out at the start of this season. And he also talks about the book that's coming out at the start of next season, which should be a really interesting read. So I don't know how many people actually know what book he's actually doing, but he does talk about that. It's really... Yeah, one that I'll be looking forward to listening, you know, get my hands on and reading. And also he talks about, you know, we obviously, as we do, we delve into the modern day and we sort of make sure, you know, who we'd love to sit and write a book with as well and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's the two pods that I think people will enjoy. So, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, thanks, obviously, guys, for both joining. Thanks to everybody for listening. As always, we'll be back with your pods next Friday. So take care and see you soon.